Welcome back to the Breaking Western podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the Breaking Western podcast,
we welcome you back to a very special episode with a very special guest in the true theme of Breaking or season two's influencers. We are proud to bring you another influential person within the Western industry.
He is a man of many talents. Trick roper, team roper, talk show host, rodeo announcer, brand ambassador, general personality, and one of our personal heroes.
Yes.
Now, he's tough enough to blow a bubble with beef jerky, smooth enough to pop a wheelie on a unicycle, and if he hasn't hung up on us yet,
then we're proud to present
Anthony Lucia.
Wow. How much time did you guys spend on Google to come up with that intro?
Yeah, very minimal. You would be surprised.
Honestly, it's disappointing how little. So, Anthony, how the heck are you? What's happening?
Oh, man, I'm doing so good. So good. Just, you'll have to excuse me. My mind is just blown about all these things I've learned in the first 3 minutes of this conversation. So, yeah.
Well, I think the role of a good interviewer is to not only teach their listeners something, but also teach their guests something about themselves. So thank you so much.
You're most welcome.
Start at the beginning, obviously. Rewind, how did this all start for you? What brought you into the rodeo world? And more importantly, what made you stay in it?
Oh, man, that's going to take a while. Tommy Lucia was a famous rodeo clown, and then he made this switch to being a contract entertainer where he had animal acts and a lot of different things, and so I was basically born into rodeo. I was the fifth of five children, which makes sense because I was the fifth of five children and the youngest of them all, and my dad, but also makes sense because I was the fifth.
You're doing great.
Thank you. Yeah, I talk for a living, guys. Cool. My dad did everything. I mean, he was a phenomenal rodeo clown. He worked the barrel with the National Finals Rodeo. He was on the executive board and the PRCA, and was always known for being a great animal trainer. And he had a monkey that rode a dog named Whiplash, the cowboy monkey. He had black horses that were dancing horses. That both had sway backs, and he was just creative and awesome, and he was my number one influence in my life. And it was a deal where it was never forced upon us to be in rodeo or to like rodeo even, because he actually always encouraged us to do other things. And one of my brothers actually is a doctor. Mm-hmm. in emergency medicine, specializing in pediatrics.
Oh, very cool. So
it was one of those things where I just have always loved rodeo. I've always loved horses, always loved the livestock, always loved the lifestyle, always loved the work that you had to put into anything in rodeo if you wanted to be good in it. And that's, you know, my dad throughout his career, throughout our lives, whether no matter what we were doing, his motto was hard work always works. Mm-hmm. And if you were going to be a son of Tommy Lucia, my dad, then you were going to not do anything half-butted. You weren't going to do anything mediocre, no matter what you were doing. And it didn't mean you had to be good at it, but you dang sure had to try your guts out to be good at it and at least be the best that you could be in whatever occupation or whatever job you were doing. So that kind of resonated with me at a young age, because didn't really have a choice. But then as I got older, I realized that it became more than a not having a choice, but it became a way of life, and that's just the way we do things, and that's the way that you kind of make up your mind at a certain point of your life where this is the way I'm going to do things, and I'm going to try to make whatever I'm doing great, and if I fail, at least I fail while giving it my all, and if I succeed, then I succeed while giving it my all, and you just embrace that as a way of life and as your mindset. And so my dad since in his illustrious career. He is now in basically every Rodeo Hall of Fame you could be in. He's in not only the Texas Cowboy Hall of Fame, he's in the Texas Rodeo Cowboy Hall of Fame, he's in the National Cowboy Hall of Fame, and he's last year was inducted into the Pro Rodeo Cowboy Association Hall of Fame. And so having him as a role model, even though he didn't announce, he didn't really do anything that I do, but what made him successful in his life is what's propelled me to, not saying I'm successful, but I'm saying I'm achieving and chasing my goals every single day. And so that's kind of how I got into it and why I've stayed. And I love the people of rodeo. I love the animals of rodeo. I love telling their stories. And I truly, truly love the fans of rodeo and of the fans of Western sports in general.
Amazing. And that, I think your dad taught so many important lessons just through the way he lived. It sounds like he kind of showed you the way, but he didn't force you to go down
a path.
Like, that's so powerful.
Yeah.
So important.
Yeah.
And really, like, he taught you lessons that could be carried over, you know, into any field.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, it's apparent with my two other brothers. I've had one brother that passed away a couple years ago, but my oldest brother, Tommy Joe, clowned. Like, he was a rodeo clown as well and did a lot of great things, but then he found that he loved rodeo production.
Mm.
So he started putting on rodeos, putting on events. He started all the world's toughest rodeos. He owned that company for a while. He worked for Steve Gander. Then he bought that company and put on all those events. He ran the PBR for 10 or 12 years and kind of took it to the level that it's at now. Like, a lot of the things, if you've ever been to a Unleash the Beast series events, a lot of the things they do in the opening and with their production, all of those are derivatives from things that my brother implanted. And then he runs the Days of 47 Rodeo, the Million Dollar Rodeo Cowboy Games in Salt Lake City, Utah. He's done production for IndyCar. And now he's got school boards. He's got a pyro company and a production company. They've done stages and lighting for Reba McEntire and Music Fest and all different kinds of stuff. And then my other brother is a doctor and graduated at the top of his class, you know, great family man. He's got 5 kids. And so it's really neat kind of what my dad instilled into us, even though he was and could be hard on us at times, you know, maybe a little more than he should have or could have. But on the same instance, when it's all said and done, he put us all on a path to doing whatever God wanted us to do and do it at a high level. And then there's me. It's like I list off all the cool things my brother's done, and I'm like,
well, get out of here.
Pretty minuscule.
So, we all do that.
Yeah.
But that's me.
But it's amazing, though. I mean, all of you, this runs, it's not just in your blood, it's like deep in your bones that rodeo and the Western world is just this legacy that's been passed on to you, and you're living that out. So really, I'm like super curious what rodeo means to you and like the Western world. And when we talk about things like the cowboy way, because it's so much more than a sport. And it's not just a lifestyle. It's a way of life.
Yeah, that's a loaded question. And I know for sure we don't have time for me to explain what rodeo means.
We're just here hardballing right now.
No, I'll tell you what I'll do, though. I'll try to make this as concise as I can. But rodeo to me is a family. And that extends beyond just the people that you normally see or the competitors or the personnel. And it extends really to our fans and to the animals that give us the opportunity, all of us the opportunity, to be where we want to be and do what we want to do in life. Because it takes such a community and such a backing, whether it's the sponsors, whether it's just the local support from a community, whether it's the state and government support. It takes so many people to make rodeo a success, let alone being a competitor in rodeo and trying to make that a successful lifestyle. But rodeo to me is, I don't know if I can pinpoint just one thing that it is, because it's so many things. It's my livelihood. It's my love. It's how I met my wife. It's how I've had some of the greatest victories and greatest defeats in my life. It encompasses so many things in my life that I don't go a day, one, without thinking about rodeo, talking about rodeo, thinking about rodeo. And so rodeo to me is, I mean, God is, I feel so, so blessed that God has given me this life and this family, per se. It's just like y'all. I mean, we met because of rodeo. We met because the national finals rodeo in Las Vegas, and you know, and so there's just, rodeo's big to me. And even though it's small on the grand scale of things, to me, rodeo is everything.
To the world, you may be just another girl. Finish it.
But to me, maybe you are the world. That is rodeo.
One of us is a professional singer. One of us is not. I'll let y'all guess.
You be the judge on which one. Thank you. Angel or Abigail.
Angel. Oof. But that's so, I think that's such a powerful sentiment to think of something like rodeo, and especially to people who are outside of that community who look in on it and just see it as kind of, you know, another,
just like a hobby
or another industry or, you know, just something that's out there. And once you're inside of it, you know, it's so much more than that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I love that. So at what point, Anthony, were you like, okay, this is, you know, your dad wasn't pushing on you, but you decided yourself, this is what I love. This is what I want to do. At what point were you like becoming, you know, a brand ambassador, getting sponsored, or like starting to make it your livelihood rather than just like you're coming up and kind of playing in the sport?
Well, I knew growing up that I've always loved entertaining, and I've always been a little entertainer from whether I was a little kid and the way that I could make people laugh, or, you know, as I got older, I loved helping my dad. That's all I did growing up, was help my dad with his acts, and they would announce, you know, Tommy Lucia and Whiplash the Cowboy Monkey, or Tommy Lucia, you know, Entertainer of the Year in Pro Rodeo, and I realized in my teenage years, I was like, I want to make my mark. Like, I love being my dad's son. And I love being Tommy Lucia's boy. But when I was 15, 16 years old, I really, really wanted to start making my mark. And I had the opportunity to be around a lot of really cool people growing up that had a big influence on my life. And I'd always loved roping. And I'd always loved, but I never got to rope. Because, I mean, we were gone all the time with my dad. And I started some young horses and trained some colts and did some stuff like that. And then I rode a few outside horses when we were home. If we were home for a couple of months, I would train some outside horses for people and do stuff like that. But when I was 9 years old, I saw trick roping for the first time. Or maybe it wasn't the first time, but it really, I saw it and I was like, wow, that's cool. And I'd always loved having a rope in my hand. And so I started playing around with a rope. Well, next thing I know, I was teaching myself how to trick rope. Well, when I was 10 or 11, I got to be in some opening ceremonies for Harper and Morgan Rodeo Company. They were like the kingpins of the Southeast. They had all the Jackson, Mississippi's and Lafayette's and Lake Charles and Tupelo's and Memphis and all those big rodeos there. And they incorporated, they did basically a kid's opening where they had a little kid ride a calf, they had a little kid on a stick horse, they had a little girl on a pony that would run barrels. Then they had me trick rope in it as well. And I only knew a handful of tricks, but I would do that, and at the end of it, I would take my hat off, and to hear the fans cheer for something that I did was pretty special. And it wasn't like a, oh, I'm so cool kind of a deal. It was like, these people appreciate, whether they know or not, the hard work that I put into this to be good, and to actually be able to show something that I'm proud of, and then they appreciate it, and they cheered for me. As a little kid, that was big. That was a set. The first year I did openings, I didn't know anything, but I knew how to butterfly, but I was little and cute, so they threw me in this opening, and they put the spotlight on me, and chubby little Anthony would just, and then I would, you know, I'd throw the rope down, and I'd throw my hands up and smile, and the fans would cheer, and then I'm like, okay, I could get used. used to this. So then I started working harder and learning more tricks and stuff to do with the rope. And I had great guys throughout my trick roping career influence me. And whether it was Jerry Diaz or Tomas Garcia-Lazo or J.W. Stoker or Vince Bruce, and I was a visual learner. So I never had lessons, but I would watch these guys. I'd study their VHS tapes at the time. I'm dating myself. But,
relatable.
And I would be like, I want to try that. So I would practice on hours and hours and hours. I got pretty good at trick roping when I was 18, 19 years old. I felt like I needed to be on my own, doing my own thing. Well, my dad needed my help to be able to continue. He was older. He needed my help to continue to do what he wanted to do with his axe, and he was still extremely busy, and it kind of bugged me, because I'm like, I'm 20 years old, I'm a badass trick roper, and I'm over here cleaning up monkey poop and selling 8x10 colored pictures of Whiplash the Cowboy Monkey, and everybody goes, oh, you're Tommy's boy, oh, you're that kid with the monkey. And I never got to be Anthony. And, wow. I mean, people knew me, but they didn't know I could trick rope, because I didn't have my PRCA card, so I didn't trick rope, you know, at any of the places my dad worked. Well, in, I guess it would have been 2009, my dad's black horse died, one of his acts, and he had contracted all these rodeos that he was supposed to have two acts at, like two, you know, different spots throughout the rodeo to be an entertainer. Well, guess who got called up to the big leagues?
Uh-huh.
Old Anthony did. So when I first started, I was little chubby Anthony. Bigger, chubbier Anthony. Got called up to the big leagues. Big booty Judy. Time to do what I do. And anyway, so I got my first year as a PRCA member. I got to trick rope at Dodge City, Kansas, the Dodge City Roundup, the Days of 47 in Salt Lake, North Platte, Nebraska. And I got to do some cool stuff. Well, then the next year, I got hired by the Fort Worth Stock Show and Rodeo, which was 31 performances in a rodeo that I had grown up at, helping my dad. And I got to step out there. And I don't even know where this question started. I feel like I'm rambling, but that's...
Keep
that's
going. I'm intrigued.
Well, that's kind of how it all started, and kind of when I realized that I want to make my mark on this business. And since my dad passed away, it's changed about me making my mark, and it's changed into I want to continue our legacy of entertainment, continue my dad's legacy in my own way, and continue that Lucia last name of a high, I don't know how to say it, like not a high professional, but a high quality professional doing some cool stuff and making people happy.
That is so neat. I love that. It's like, you know, it's not even about a specific event or a specific thing you're doing, but it's just a quality overall and a type of person that you can expect when you go to this event. You're going to have this certain attitude,
feeling,
persona, right from this person carrying on a legacy, which is so, so neat. So as you're coming up and you're starting to do announcing, you're starting to do trick roping,
you're starting to really come into your own as not just
a son, but as a person.
Yeah.
You know, at what point did you start getting into, like, television, getting into sponsorships, getting into, like, bigger, the things that if we Google your name, we find.
yeah, that's dangerous if you Google my name.
Oh, it's really fun.
A lot of stuff.
We enjoyed it, personally.
The last 7 years of my life has been a lot of different things. Not anything bad, but just a lot of different adventures and fun stuff. So when I first started... So my dad never had, I got to regress. Once again, you're going to find a common theme in my life, and it's my dad.
I love it.
But my dad never had sponsors. And so I'm thinking, he's got one of the most famous little monkeys, the famous at rodeo acts, hands down, one of the most recognized people. I mean, not he's not a person, but one of the most recognized names in rodeo is Whiplash the Cowboy Monkey. And so I'm thinking to myself, man, and we didn't have a lot of money, but we were busy and dad paid his bills and whatever. And so we would, I'm like, so I'll just tell you how it started. So I wanted a fuzzy hat, like a grizzly hat. Okay. I don't know if you guys remember those.
Yeah, I just bought one.
She was really excited about it.
So I wanted one of those, and there was no way I was going to get my dad to spend $400 to buy one, and I didn't have any money because the monkey didn't pay worth a shit. Excuse my language.
Maybe he paid in shit.
Yeah, exactly. Literally.
Literal shit.
And that doesn't go very far in the real world. So I'm thinking to myself, how can I get this hat? So then I got to, I'm 17 years old, and I'm like, hang on a second. I see these other cowboys, and they've got, you know, sponsors on their shirts, and they're doing endorsement deals and stuff. And I'm like, why in the world does my dad not have sponsors? So I go, Dad, what would you think about me being your agent and getting you some sponsors? And he's like, I mean, if you can. Rock on, I don't care. So I call around and get the number for at that time it was Stan Redding. He worked for Resistol. And I get the number for Stan Redding, and I'm nervous, and I finally get, you know, a call to him in the office, and I pitch him this deal and how we can do this and we can brand him here, and I just figure it out as I go. And he's like, okay, what do you guys want? What do you guys want? For all these things that you're going to provide. And I go, well, to be honest, Stan, I really want one of those grizzly hats.
Let me level with you, Stan.
He laughed just like that. And he's like, okay, what else do you guys want? And I'm like, well, Stan, that's pretty much it. He's
like, well, Stan, I'm going to be honest. I had an ulterior motive, and if it was only that hat.
Exactly. I was still very immature in my way of thinking, and he's like, how about this? How about we give you guys, you know, X amount of hats a year, give you X amount of dollars, and this, that, and the other, and I'm like, okay, but one of those hats, that's going to be the grizzly, right? The furry hat, the brown one, the chocolate, it's got long hair. He's like, yes, that can be one of the hats, whatever you guys need. We're just happy to have you on the team. And I'm like, huh, this is pretty cool. So fast forward a year later, after we got Resistol. So we used to buy Walmart Wranglers. If I mentioned this earlier, Anthony and his thunder thighs and his big booty didn't fit very good into 13 MWZ, so I had to shop in the Husky section. That was humiliating for teenager Anthony. Had to check out two pairs of Husky Wranglers.
What? He's crying.
I'm crying at the thought of you, like, being on a landline phone talking.
So,
to resist, I'll be like, but what about the hat in your Husky? Continue.
So there was this new company, because I did not want to wear Wranglers, because I'm like, I thought all Wranglers were, you know, the ones you bought at Walmart that did not fit worth the heck, especially if you had any kind of meat on your butt. And so there was this new company called Diamond Cut Jeans. They had sponsored a friend of mine named Mike Maddie, a world champion bullfighter, and he was actually dating the girl whose company it was. So I always hung out with Mike because he roped the horns, and he actually taught me how to rope the horns on a bale of hay. Like, he had a dummy, and I'd go rope his dummy for hours and hours. And anyway, so I got to talking to this girl, and I was like, man, what makes your jeans special? She's like, well, there's more room in the butt and thigh area. And the reason we call them diamond cut is because instead of just one seam down in your undercarriage, it's actually, there's a diamond there that gives more room for your man junk. And I'm like, this gets better and better.
Teenage Anthony thought the Resistol phone call was the best day of his life until he found out about diamond cut jeans.
My butt and my undercarriage junk? This is, what? So, I get us a deal with diamond cut jeans. And I'm like, I'm really getting used to this. Like, I'm pimping out the surely becoming more fashionable.
Just reaping the benefits.
Exactly. Yes. I'm finally getting my bread that this monkey's been keeping from me all these years. Anyway, so that kind of basically, and long story short, that's how I started into talking to sponsors. Well, my dad had actually, I failed to mention this. He had Justin Boots as a sponsor for, he'd been with Justin for, since John Justin was running the company for years and years. So we always wore Justin Boots, but, and so I should have prefaced that Resist All wasn't our first sponsor, but we did have Justin Boots, or Dad the Monkey did. I also reaped the rewards by getting a pair of Justin Boots, so that was great. But when I first started trick roping, probably when I was 19, and I actually got pretty handy at it, I was doing a lot of different stuff, these different radio committees, or when we go do different building events and they would have media days, they would hire me to talk about the rodeo. They would hire me to, you know, to trick rope a little bit, teach the news anchors how to trick rope, talk about what was coming at the rodeo and promote the rodeo on television. If they said, okay, we got a minute and a half, talk about what we're going to see tonight. Well, then I would go into a spiel and I'd trick rope and whatever. So I thought I had something to sell. So I called Tom Feller when I was 18 or 19 years old. And I was like, you guys want to sponsor me? I'm doing all these media stuff. I'm trick roping. We're doing private events. At that time, I really had nothing, to be being honest. I didn't deserve to be sponsored. But Tom Feller had known me literally since I was born. And he signed me on as an endorsee. Surprisingly, honestly. Because I still would have worn their patch because I had to wear Dad's shirts, you know, that he got during his act. And obviously had to be the same brands or whatever. I asked him, I'm like, I mean, thank you for sponsoring me, and I do believe I'm going to do you a good job, but don't, like, when I first got the contract, I'm like, don't you think this is a little much? Because I'm thinking 3 or 4 pairs of boots a year or a pair of boots, whatever. It was a cash deal as my first sponsor, and I'm like, and he goes, Anthony, you're going to do great things. He goes, I can see, like, he's been, Tom Feller has believed in me since day one, and that was a huge, huge boost in my confidence going, maybe I can be something more than just Tommy's boy or more than just what I think that I am. And I don't even think people saw me that way, but that's how I saw myself. So that was a struggle, right? If I wish we could sometimes see how other people see us, especially those that care about us. I'm glad I can't see. We can't see how some people see us. But I think a lot of times... I think a lot of times we put ourselves in this box of how we think and who we think we are, and it's not even remotely close to actually how people see us and how they, you know, does that make sense? Oh,
yeah, totally. Absolutely. And all I can think about is how, like, in this industry, really, like, any industry, it's all about confidence and really just selling yourself.
Right.
Even when you're not totally sure of yourself, just like blindly entering
the possibility
into that boldly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you did, reaching out to people and just saying, hey, this is what I have to offer, and putting it all out on the table.
My dad always said there's 4 S's. Some will, some won't. So what? Someone's waiting.
Oh, shit, that's good.
Okay.
That's really good.
Anyways, and Tom believing in me helped me really believe in myself. And because at the end, like you just said, at the end of the day, if we don't believe in ourselves, who else is going to believe in us? Mm. You know? And so that's kind of how I got into being a brand ambassador, as you call it. And then in 2010, Cinch signed me, in 2000, one of the greatest lessons that I ever received was when Billy Bray with Classic, she gave me a small deal when I was trick roping a lot. Well, before I really got, like, big jobs, she gave me a really good deal. Well, then she cut me from the team. Mm. And that was a big eye-opener for me. Mm. Because I loved being a part of the Classic team. Because literally the best team ropers in the world, all my heroes, they were Classic guys. And so I loved being a part of the team. But when she cut me, it was a big wake-up call, and I said, okay, Anthony, this was kind of a pivotal point in my life. Like, if you're going to do this, kind of just started floating a little bit. And I was, I think, 23 or 24, and I'd lived with my dad since I was obviously a baby. But I didn't go to college. I didn't do anything like that. So I lived with my dad until I was 23 years old. Well, then when I moved out, it was like a 23-year-old guy with an 18-year-old's mindset.
Mm.
Because it was the first time my dad was very strict, and I had a, this is going to sound dumb, but I had a curfew up until the day I moved out.
Wow.
And it was one of those things that was a respect thing. It wasn't like, it was, hey, I don't want you coming in at all hours of the night because I'm going to be sleeping and I need to get sleep. Or right. I don't want you being out late because it's dangerous. Like, my dad was very protective of us, and he felt like it was his responsibility to keep us safe, and he knew how big of a wild child he was. So he can only imagine, after raising me, how what I was going to be like. Well, I was actually a pretty good kid. But then when I was 23 and I moved out, I was like, oh, neato. Look at all these things I've never experienced before. What's this? Is this beer? So I started floating around, and I started not making some good choices and being a bit of a vagrant and kind of a degenerate. When Classic cut me, it kind of was a big wake-up call because I'd lost a sponsor. I had never lost a sponsor. I thought I was the freaking golden child, and I'd been getting sponsors since I was 17 years old, and, you know, blah, blah, thought I was kind of a badass. Well, I wasn't. I wasn't anything. I hadn't done crap. Literally, on the grand scheme of things, I hadn't done crap. And when Billy called and cut me, it was a huge wake-up call. And so, actually, I got sponsored the next week by Cactus Ropes. And, you know, instead of me going, okay, just keep doing what you're doing, work your way back, and get back to Classic, I'm like, I'm going to go to Cactus. So, and my pilot at Cactus was awesome to me. And long story short, I went through the progression, and I started working hard at everything, at trick roping, at team roping. And then after the second time, after I placed at the George Strait, or the first time, rather, after I placed at the George Strait team roping, Billy Bray called me again. And she's like, you want to be back on the Classic team? And I'm like, and at that time I'd worked my way up with the Cactus and Fastback companies. And I was like, well, you cutting me kind of might be working against you now, because now I'm actually worth something.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, I get it. And that's what we wanted. And we want you back on the team, and we're willing to pay for it. And I was like, awesome. So that's how that happened. And then I started, I trick up the NFR 4 years in a row. And then when I realized, and my dad had a lot to do with this, when I realized that trick roping wasn't going to be my end game, I had always announced a little bit. I'd hosted a few things. And like I said, I did the TV stuff for the different rodeos. So I'd learned to talk on television, and when the lights come on, to be able to be precise and hit my marks and be able to put what I want to say into a certain time limit, and all that stuff started working together. And in 2014, I made the decision to go fully into announcing. And so I stopped taking jobs trick roping, and I still did a few private events here and there, but stopped taking jobs trick roping because I wanted to be announcer as my main jam. And announcing kind of opened some doors to some other things. And then I went on America's Got Talent 2010 trick roping, and that kind of started the fire of that I really liked television, because it was just so neat to be a part of those productions and to see the lights, and just how Nick Cannon was the host, and I just thought he had the coolest job ever. And getting to be in that, and I made it to the Vegas round or whatever it was, then I got axed, but whatever.
I don't even care.
Honestly, it was an experience. It was so awesome. That kind of started fueling the television bug, and then I guess in 2012 or 13, I got a call from a casting director for this brand new show they were going to do called Rodeo Girls, and they needed some man meat.
in them diamond cut jeans.
Well, I was cinch at that time, so I've been cinch since 2010.
Nope.
And so I was actually in Hawaii. Some friends of mine own some property over there, and we went over and were roping, and I did a Skype call with them, and the next week I was flying to Scottsdale, Arizona, and they were picking me up in a limo at the airport, and I had no idea what I was getting into. All I knew is that I told them what I would generally make at a rodeo, trick roping or announcing, and I said, I'm not coming unless y'all pay me, and they said, okay, come on, and so I got, that whole deal actually made me quite a bit of money. I was the highest paid, quote unquote, actor or character on that show. Anyways, they brought me in to do, I was supposed to be the, again, man meat, for all the girls, and I was supposed to, like, not literally make my way around them, but for the show, like, you know, be the flirt, be kind of a douchebag in a sense, and I think I nailed it. But, so I did that. We filmed 6 episodes. I met Jessica on that. We dated for 1.5 years after the show was over.
Oh, wow.
And, well, we dated during the show because I met her at Scottsdale, which was the pilot. And whenever, and then we started talking and we started dating after that. And then when the producers found out, they were like, how's this going to work, Anthony? You're supposed to be the guy, you know,
you're
all
supposed
this
to keep going.
Like, well, if you guys want me, you better change your storyline. And so they did. And yeah, so we went through the whole show and made some good money, had some grand adventures, was a part of a really, it was a dumb show, right? I mean, it wasn't anything accurate. It wasn't a docuseries. It wasn't a docudrama. It was a reality show.
It was entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, and the one thing I've learned about reality shows, there's nothing real to them.
Yeah.
If there is, it's very little.
Yeah.
I mean, we had scripts without having scripts. They've never handed us scripts, but they told us what they wanted us to do, and then basically, here's the outline, now fill it in with your words.
Mm.
And here's the drama that we want, now fill it in with your words. Here's this scene that we want, now fill it in with your words. And it was a blast. I mean, honestly, like, we had fun. And it was on A&E, which was a big network. And, you know, I still catch a lot of crap for being on that show. But what I didn't realize is that that got me a pretty big social media presence.
Mm.
It showed me, I know I don't have as many interactions as I should according to the number of followers I have, Abby.
I was going to say, we did talk about this.
Your engagement. Attacked.
Nobody
look at my social media page. I hope you understand the irony of that coming from me.
Well, either way, it exposed me to a lot of people, and I met a lot of really cool people through it, and we had a ton of fun, and then that kind of, I realized that I didn't like reality shows, but I still wanted to do some stuff on TV.
Mm.
And in 2009, I guess the same year that I started trick roping professionally, I started doing my talk show in Las Vegas. It was bad, honestly. It was bad. I'm not saying it's great now, but it was really bad then. I just didn't know. I didn't know anything what I was doing, and it was a learning process. And then, but as you do something, and again, it goes back to what my dad taught us: figure it out and do it, and try to do it right. And I learned a lot of very valuable lessons throughout that. Everything with my talk show, and then I finally, my dream when I started the talk show was to get it on TV one day. Well, then in 2015, Rad TV. We went 15, 16, 17, 18. We went 4 seasons on Ride TV. So that was big for me. And then last year we were on Ride Pass, which is the PBR's digital platform. And we had a ton of interactions and views. And it was a big success. And throughout this whole time I've announced rodeos. I did the All-American for Charity. And at Ride TV, I did a ton of TV stuff for them, whether it was the Cinch Tide Event Championship, like I said, all the stuff from Rito. So I did horse racing for 3 years, did the NBHA World Finals 2 years, a ton of stuff, and that kind of led me into the Western sports broadcasting aspect of it. Still love announcing rodeos, and that's my true passion. I mean, TV is great because it pays really good, and I enjoy it, but I don't, if you said, Anthony, pick one, it's rodeo announcing, mm-hmm. professional rodeo. It all comes back to rodeo and the family, and that's where I am today, in the end.
And I love that, because, I mean, think about this story arc that you've just given to us that starts with a cowboy monkey, has a plot point with a reality TV show, and then brings us a plot point. Yeah. You know, bear with me.
Oh, a plot point.
Not flat. It was a peak.
Plot point.
Your information.
I'm so sorry. I didn't think that would strike such a chord.
Well, I mean, I'm just kidding.
But it has, you know, you have a reality TV show in there, and then it brings us to this moment that you're in where you're rodeo announcing and doing a whole host of other things. I think really speaks to the power of saying yes to all of the opportunities that present themselves to you.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, all that. Sorry, I was reading a text. What did you say?
If it was Lisa, tell her we say hi. Yeah.
It was for another podcast.
Okay, bye.
Sorry.
So, looking back on everything that you've done up until this point, obviously it's grown, it's evolved, it's changed a little bit. You've added some characters. We have Lisa in the mix now. Where do you see going from here? Yeah. And we forgot.
I love my wife.
Yeah, you are half of Boot Barn's power couple.
What they called you, a modern day Johnny and June.
I don't know if you've seen my wife in that. I'm a mere prop.
Yeah, she's a babe.
Oh,
man.
But, you know, they gave you half.
They called you Johnny and June. So
I mean, I was technically the base of their story.
Sure.
And then they were just using me to get to my wife because she's basically a supermodel.
She is.
That's the only reason we're talking to her.
Clearly not very smart because she's married to me, but she's really pretty. I'm just kidding.
And that counts for something.
She's like the smartest person I know. It's sickening.
It's sickening.
Just bad choices when it comes to relationship, you know.
Well, that'll happen. But where do you see it all going from here? Now that you've got the girl, you've got the career, you're building, you're doing, you're going, where do you see it going next?
I'm going to be honest. I have very lofty goals. That's one thing I've always done. When I team rope, I want to make the NFR. Do I go enough to make the NFR? No. But every time I'm back in the box, I think about, you know, I want to win every rodeo I go to. I want to win every jackpot I go to. I want to make the NFR. I want to, you know, whatever. My original goal was I want to be the first guy to ever trick rope at the NFR, like be an official specialty act of the NFR, entertainer, compete there in the team roping, and then announce it.
Wow.
I don't, that's again, lofty goals.
That'd be cool.
But
yeah.
That would be cool. But I can't commit enough fully to team roping you guys know, if you're going to do something, you've got to go 150% all in, period.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, hey, I can't go to this rodeo because I'm hired at this event to go announce. I can't hit up this string of rodeos over the 4th of July because I'm going to be announcing a 4th of July rodeo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's you can't do that if you want to be top of the game in the team roping. You know, I still enter and I still have dreams of, well, maybe if I get in the top four, I can go to Houston, go to San Antonio, win 70,000 between those two, and basically have the NFR made and go when I can. Like, I still think that's still a goal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's unrealistic or realistic, whatever, call it what you want, that's still a goal that I have. Announcing wise, I want to announce the NFR.
Heck yeah.
I want to be the guy. TV wise, again, it's kind of one of those things. One thing I've learned the last 2 or 3 years when I've been really heavily involved in television, because of those commitments, it's hurt my rodeo announcing.
Mm.
Because when people see you all the time doing television, Well, they think that's what you do. You're a TV guy. Mm-hmm. No, I'm a rodeo announcer that's doing TV. You know, I've been fortunate enough to do, I guess, 5 CBS major network broadcasts up to this point in the last year and a half, which is huge. Like the neatest thing ever to be able to hold a microphone that, you know, Jim Nance and Tony Romo and so many greats before me in other sports are getting to be on CBS Sports and be on CBS Network. And like, it's kind of surreal to even think about it. And I'm getting to bring rodeo to it.
Mm.
Like this year I had the privilege of bringing the very first Western sport back to CBS, which was the PBR Unleash the Beast event. It was at Lazy Arena with no fans. It was the first fanless event that any Western sport did. And I hosted it on television. Wow. And it was awesome. It was very surreal and different. But if there's one thing that I've learned is that you've got to commit. It's great to be versatile. It's great to have a bunch of different irons in the fire. But at the end of the day, people have to see your commitment to this one thing in order to truly, especially in our business, I feel like, take you serious and go, okay, this is what this guy is doing. And so my focus through this coronavirus and all this, the pandemic and the quarantining and all that BS, my focus has really changed to what do I love day in and day out. If you said, Anthony, the next 52 weekends, you can either do TV or you can announce rodeos. What are you going to do?
Mm.
Well, I'd make more money doing TV, but I love announcing rodeos. I love being able to give those fans who've spent their hard-earned money that 2 hours of telling them about a sport and the people and the animals that I love, to entertain them and give them 2.5 hours or 2 hours of just forgetting about whatever junk is going on in their lives, even before all this COVID junk, whatever junk is going on in your life, forget about it. For the next 2 hours, let me take you on a journey about America's original sport, one of the most unique, hard, difficult, sacrificial, brutal, violent sports that you'll ever watch, but you're going to love it. And that's where I see myself. I've always said I'm going to do what God wants me to do, and God has given me a heart for rodeo and I think a little bit of ability that I've had to work my butt off to refine and hone and try, and I still have an immense amount of work to do to be where I want to be and be as good as I want to be, and I don't think I'm ever going to stop learning. But I guess in essence, to do everything that I'm going to do now and in the future to the fullest of my abilities, work my butt off every day to be the best, and at the end of my life, if I'm not the best, at least I gave my all trying to be.
Dang.
You know what? I'm going to say this confidently, and I think everyone listening will agree, is I can't wait to listen to you announce the NFR. We're going to be there. We'll be sitting right there, not to troll you this time, but to support you because you deserve
a fun thing.
All of it.
Yeah, that was amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to sit with little old us.
Little old us.
Hey, you guys aren't little or old.
So. That's true.
Thank you.
We're
big and young.
You guys are, I'm not gonna
thank you.
Oh, what, sweetie. Yeah.
You were doing so good, Anthony.
Oh, God.
You guys truly are. You're awesome, and I'm not. This isn't going to become a stroke contest now, but.
But why not?
In all seriousness, you guys, when I first met you last year at the Rio, and you were singing, like we showed up, and there was 2 people in the audience, just because I did a poor job of marketing the pre-show entertainment and stuff.
Preach.
And anyways, not going to get into all that, but. What I was taken aback, one, because Angel is very attractive, and 2, she has a voice of a songbird.
Of a literal
like
angel.
I've never heard.
Of a literal angel.
Yes, of a literal angel. and I told my buddy, my best friend, Georgie Jake, I was like, gosh, why do we not have her on the show? Hey. And then you kind of blew me off. you didn't really talk to me that much, and I thought you were kind of a B. And then whenever we ran back into each other, I think it was at one of the hooey parties or something, and we all hit it off again, and we became lifelong friends. And yeah. But you guys both are doing really cool things, and I see a lot of my, I don't want to say I see myself in y'all, but I see that same kind of passion for whatever y'all are doing in y'all. And just the fun-loving and the wild spirit and the different business ventures that I know you guys are on, and I see different things. You know, I love that. I love seeing hustlers, and I love seeing people work hard, and I love seeing people go, you know what? It doesn't matter that I'm from Iowa. It doesn't matter that I'm from Timbuktu. It doesn't matter that I was raised with a monkey. I want to make my own mark and make an impact on people's lives in a positive way, and I know y'all are doing that.
Doesn't even matter that we're from Iowa. No, I love it. That's amazing. So,
yeah.
Anthony, tell everyone where they can find you on the interwebs.
SuperLucia33. Yes, that's right. You heard it here first. At SuperLucia.
Sorry, Super SuperDucia. SuperDucia.
Okay.
Sorry, that was SuperLucia33.
Anyways, back to when I first met you, I thought you were B.
Wait, that's for Angela, not me, right?
Sure.
Yes, that's for Angel, not you. I mean, you've always been nice.
Oh, excellent. I thought you were going to say you've always been a B.
No, you've always been nice. You are Angel's saving grace.
Yeah.
Yes, I am. For sure. Thank you.
Yes, I am.
And you're also really humble, and I love that.
Thank you.
You're probably the most humble person you've ever met. So
other than you,
other than you, of course.
Yeah. It's all fake. There's one thing I've learned, and it's about humility. The minute I start to think I'm kind of a badass is the minute I fall flat on my face.
Oh yeah.
And the minute I stop learning. So
true.
If I self-deprecate, and yes, I'm confident in what I can do, but more importantly, I'm confident in the work that I put into things that I do. And that's what gives me the confidence. It's not the fact that I'm going to be, you know, always perfect and never make mistakes, because I make, gosh, just ask my wife, I make a lot. But the work that I put into not making those mistakes again and being prepared for whatever job that I'm doing, that's where I derive my confidence. It's not an arrogance or a, hey, look at me. It's like, I'm just going to try to outwork everybody.
And that's so key, that always being a learner and reminding yourself that you know, you don't always know everything and there's always space to learn and to grow makes all the difference.
Yeah. And that's where we're at in my life. And so, gosh, what in the heck were we even talking about?
You know, we were trying to say bye, but you keep us on the phone, and it's just awkward at this point.
Anyway, so Angela had a beautiful voice, but she was a B. Yeah. Anyways, just great. All of that.
She's wonderful. You can keep her. She can be your wardrobe designer.
Honestly,
forever.
Anthony, I take that as highest praise, because I feel like the first time we actually met was when I was like drinking a lot of whiskey and was wearing the snakeskin jumpsuit. So
yes.
And I say snakeskin jumpsuit out loud, and it makes it sound like maybe a cute girl kind of thing.
It wasn't. It was what it was.
It was a lot.
It was a lot.
But I'm gonna tell you what.
A lot is how
it was. Awesome.
It was awesome.
Both of y'all's outfits, you guys, all of the little fashionistas around there wearing their whatever they were wearing, like, you guys did it. And it was awesome. I still remember those outfits and the sunglasses that went with them.
Well, we can't wait to do it again, and we will this year. So
yes,
we'll see you down there.
New sunglasses.
Oh yeah, interwebs. Super Lucia with an L. Thank you.
You're welcome.
33. Facebook, Anthony Lucia, you can try to friend request me, or you can go follow my quote-unquote fan page.
Ooh.
It's basically the exact same thing as my Instagram, because I have them connected, so I don't have to do one more page. And then the next event I'm going to is actually going to be the Gold Buckle Knockout in Stoneham, Colorado. It's the last day of this month. It's the last day of the 2020 Pro Rodeo season.
Excellent.
And it's going to be the last opportunity for the top 20 bareback riders and the top 20 saddle bronc riders to earn money in Pro Rodeo and possibly punch their ticket to the National Finals Rodeo and or lengthen and help their chances of winning a gold buckle.
Oh, yeah.
It's produced at the Servi Ranch in Stoneham, and it's going to be absolutely spectacular.
It's all you.
Okay, if you remember nothing else from this podcast, we made you laugh, possibly made you cry, possibly you turned us off, but hopefully you're back for the ending. But remember this, be thankful for the ones beside you, be thankful for the God above you, and be thankful for the life before you.
There it is.
Cheers,
everyone. Cheers to that.